is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
At Madrid, these last months, NATO meeting identified the adversaries. What was fresh here is we can see Moscow as an adversary. The conflict in Ukraine, the challenge of the Western European powers now without adequate energy because of cutoff by the Russian authorities. However, what was surprising was the NATO document linked Moscow with Beijing. And so we're presented with a challenge that is not unprecedented, but certainly rare, which is that the United States has two challenges at the same time from great power list. This is not punching down. This is punching peer. I welcome Richard Fontaine of the Center for New American Security. He is the CEO. He's worked at the State Department, the National Security Council, and as a foreign policy advisor to Senator McCain. So he's seen all versions of the U.S. taking on adversaries, but not quite like this, I think. Richard, a very good evening to you. We've got two antagonists. They're not exactly joined at the hip, but they certainly have a good cop, bad cop approach right now. The thinking in Washington, first, let's establish it. Is Washington puzzled? What is to be done next? Good evening to you.
Thanks for having me. I would say that they've got a bad cop, worse cop routine going in China, Russia. And so Washington has been increasingly focused on the challenge over the long run that China poses to American interests, to the global order, to preeminence in the Indo-Pacific, so forth. And Russia was always a matter of some debate about just how threatening Russia was until, of course, February 24th of this year when Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine and launched a war of conquest. And so, yeah, it's a big question on the table among policymakers. If you believe that the Russia challenge and the China challenge are here to stay for at least a while, how do you deal with both?
All right. The thinking is in three parts. The first one is, let's try a reverse Kissinger. What does that mean, Richard?
Well, just as Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger during the Cold War took advantage of the Sino-Soviet split in order to begin normalizing relations with China so as to balance the power of the Soviet Union, they basically looked and said, OK, there's three powers on the chessboard, so to speak. Better to be part of two than part of one, or have all of them sort of floating freely. And so they aligned with China to balance Russia. So some folks over the years have suggested doing the reverse, saying that China is the big challenge for the United States indefinitely. And so the United States should align somehow with Russia and balance China. That, as we could get into, has, I think, some big problems, but that nevertheless has been put forward as a possibility.
On February 23rd, it was possible, but you now argue that it's unthinkable. It's just we can't go there. Or is that a momentary concern? Can we go there in the event of negotiations?
I don't think I think it was thinkable but unrealistic before because, one, I think the Russians and the Chinese are closer together now, certainly than the Russians and the Soviets or the Chinese and the Soviets were back at the time of the original Kissinger move. But also because of what the price the United States would have to pay in terms of its interests, as long as Vladimir Putin is running the show over there and has his designs on his sphere of influence and trying to undermine what he believes to be an American dominated unfair security order. I don't think that that is going to work. And I think that is likely to remain as long as they've got the political system there that they do today.
All right. Check off. The reverse Kissinger doesn't work. Let's go to a repeat Kissinger. What would that look like?
Yeah. So this has come up among several folks since February 24th. And some people have argued, well, actually, Russia's shown its true colors now. It, in fact, is the big threat to the United States and to the world we want to see, not China. And so while we might have our differences with China, we have to live with China. And so let's do as Nixon and Kissinger did all those years ago and put our differences aside, align with China and team up with China against Russia, sort of use China to balance Russia. And I think that, too, is not going to happen. But nevertheless, that's been put forward.
And you observe that that is unworkable given the level of enmity that's emerged in these last years, surprisingly quickly. because I'm old enough to remember when China was a trading competitor and not an adversary. And I want to ask that question. Were you surprised by the Madrid NATO document that they linked a hostile kinetic power with China that at that point was still all tangled up with COVID?
I'm not surprised that it happened, because the run-up to that NATO summit saw increasing language about the China challenge in things like the G7 communique and some of these other summits and things like that. The biggest thing is just the speed with which the change in the characterization of the relationship with China how fast this has moved over the years. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, it would have been almost unthinkable for countries to sign up to a document saying that, you know, NATO was going to resist the threat of Chinese power. And yet here's where we are. And it's in Europe and it's in North America and it's in Asia and it's in other places as well.
All right. Reverse Kissinger doesn't work. Repeat Kissinger doesn't work. At least right now, it's not seen as workable. So focusing on China, what will that look like? Not as an adversary, but I guess as the big peer, near peer, that we need to worry about for the balance of the century.
Right. So there's another group of experts who have said, well, let's just kind of let the Europeans handle Russia. Why does it have to be us? China is the big threat. This is the big enchilada. This needs to be the focus of our energy and ambitions and resources. We can't get distracted with a Europe on Europe war. And so, okay, leave it to the Europeans to sort all of this out. And the problem with that is, well, there's a couple. One is that as things go in Europe, they are going to set expectations for how things may go in other regions, including in Asia. That's why you see countries in Asia like Japan, New Zealand, Singapore, South Korea, Australia, taking steps to help Ukraine and punish Russia. They believe they have a dog in this fight. So even if all you care about is China and Asia, these issues are connected. And of course, then the other one is that since 1945, Europe has not handled security completely on its own without the United States. And there's no near-term prospect, certainly, that they will be able to do so.
All right. So we have three possibilities: reverse Kissinger, repeat Kissinger, focus on China. And there are solutions that are available, although none of them seems to exactly work. Let's begin with working with allies. We've done that before, and the allies look like the G7. Just meeting, talking all the time, AUKUS, Australia, United Kingdom, and the U.S., and NATO itself. Is that adequate to the challenge?
It's necessary, but it's not going to be sufficient. And this is where, when you step back from it and people ask, well, if you've got Russia and China linked to some degree and both defined and defining themselves to some degree as adversaries of the United States, well, they don't have a lot of allies, and we do have a lot of allies. That's one of our great strengths. And we've got, you know, the G7 and NATO and all these other countries. Absolutely true. But it does not relieve you of some of the trade-offs that are going to be necessary to make in this coming era of competition with both Russia and China.
Did the allies and the friends work in the first Cold War? What is the judgment now, Richard?
Yeah, they did work in a lot of ways. I mean, there was, you know, a series of explicit and implicit bargains of American protection for the Allies in return for forward basing of American troops and uniting of largely democratic political systems and economic interchange and so forth. And, you know, I think the Allies were a major contributor to the successful ending of the Cold War. But, you know, again, in this instance, it doesn't relieve one of having to make tough decisions about where to focus.
So the old way is not the new way right now, at least the thinking in Washington. So let's go to a second possible solution, which is to concentrate on where we're putting our spending and to concentrate on how we approach China with the CHIPS Act. What is that meant to accomplish?
Well, again, this, I think, is necessary but not sufficient. So another answer that one gives if you're sort of stuck with dealing with Russia and China simultaneously and indefinitely is, well, let's build up our sources of strength at home. Let's make sure that we're militarily powerful. Let's make sure we have an innovative economy. Let's use economic policy in order to make sure that we have a dynamic economic and defense base from which to draw and so forth and so forth. All true and necessary, but insufficient.
Insufficient because Congress is not adequate? Because
no, insufficient because Russia and China are global powers, meaning that they define their interests globally and they are active in virtually every part of the world in some place. And so if the task we put before ourselves is to resist or overcome or outmatch Russia and China everywhere they are active across the world, there's virtually no amount of domestic exertion that's going to be adequate to take on that task.
Here's a third possibility. You write temporal asymmetries. Take advantage of them. What is a temporal asymmetry?
Yeah, it's a fancy way of saying use the advantages that time gives you when you're looking at the differences between Russia and China. So Russia is very clearly a significant military threat to its neighbors, has taken used violence to upend the existing rules of the road in Europe and in other places. China hasn't used its military in that way yet. And so there's a strong argument to throw the resources necessary to deal with the Russia threat now. And hopefully we come out of this with a diminished Russian threat in the future. At the time when you can focus more on China. So you sort of focus more on Russia now, focus more on China later. And again, I think that's necessary, but not sufficient.
Not in your essay for Foreign Affairs, but it occurred to me, I was making notes from your essay. Is there any weight to looking at taking on Berlin and Tokyo simultaneously in the 1930s? We were not the power we are now, but we were a world power. Does that have a teaching lesson for us?
Well, I think part of it, you know, one always can take from these things very different lessons. The lesson, in at least in retrospect, I think from certainly what happened in Europe was don't imagine that the United States is going to remain immune to troubles in Europe. Certainly, it didn't remain immune to troubles in Asia, but for quite a long time, it did attempt to remain immune from what was going on in Europe because of the experience of the First World War. And in the end of the day, the United States had to cross the Atlantic and put an end to the war that broke out in Europe as well.
And fight the Pacific War, which if sometimes, you know, I get confused whether I'm talking about the Imperial Japanese Navy or the PLA Navy. It goes back and forth because it's the same geography. Now, what we've come up with is the problem not adequate to the solutions offered, and even the solutions that have worked in the past are not adequate. So when we come back, what will work or what might work for the balance of this century? Richard Fontaine is the CEO of the Center for New American Security, writing at Foreign Affairs about the challenge right now of simultaneous adversaries, Moscow and Beijing. I'm John Batchelor.